But don't play with me, 'cause you're playing with fire. But don't play with me, 'cause you're...
Good morning and welcome to Playing with Fire, Long Island's only food, wine, and lifestyle show. I'm your host, Tom Shortell, and I'm here broadcasting to all you food-crazed guys and girls out there. I'm here with co-host, friend, and producer, Stu Schrager. Good morning, Stu.
Good morning, Tom.
What's happening?
Not too much. It's nice times as we sort of fade out of the summer.
Yeah, I know. It's funny. Every once in a while, you get that, like, that 60-degree night that says it's not going to be long before fall. And I love fall. I mean, fall is just one of my favorite seasons. I just wish it was followed by spring. You know, that winter thing I can pass on. I don't do anything slippery.
I find it a little depressing. I love spring. I love summer.
Mm.
When we get into fall, it's like, yeah, melancholy.
Well, here comes winter. I mean, that's the problem, you know. But the weather, I mean, putting on a sweatshirt, a football game, apple, leaf peeping, all that stuff is fun.
That's hysterical. Fun. So I, again, this is so unprompted, but you always take me on a journey. So this summer, I've done a lot of traveling. Nothing exciting. We had to go to Pennsylvania. I actually flew down last week. Again, to North
Pennsylvania
Carolina.
Pennsylvania is not traveling. That's just a trip.
Well, but it can be a three-hour trip.
That's true.
And I was doing back and forth in the same day. So it was 6 hours, 7 hours in the car or whatever.
Right.
But we've done in recent times Rhode Island, because Carrie's son goes to school up there.
Right.
And I'm a sap. I can be on the southern state, and you got this border of trees on either side of you.
Yeah,
you look
yeah.
up and you see this beautiful blue sky with puffy white clouds. I'm at least sensitive enough to appreciate
it.
He's
happy to be alive. Yeah, happy to be alive.
It's just a great thing.
Yeah.
So I laugh because so many people talk about taking these journeys and trips, day trips to check out the foliage on the Palisades Parkway, like Bear Mountain and stuff.
Yeah.
And again, that's... I don't think I would go out of my way to do it, but here we're doing it. I'm enjoying the scenery. And Carrie always is like, blah, blah, oh, it's okay. Yeah. So when we were driving back from North Carolina, she goes, and she saw some scenic sights, the beautiful mountains.
Yeah, Wendy. Sure.
And she goes, wow, that's beautiful. And I had a second guess what I was hearing. And I said, wow, you're finally getting it.
Yeah, my grandmother used to talk about going up to see the foliage all the time up to New Hampshire and Vermont, and I guess it's really spectacular up there. And I've been up there in the fall, and you can be from a road and you'll see this whole scene, like off to the right or whatever, the mountainside and a house here, a house there, and this spectacular colors of fall. It's amazing. I mean, I think to me, New England in the fall is as beautiful as it gets. If you ever get a chance to go to Boston in the fall, that whole area, the South Shore, like Cohasset, I spent some time there. My friend's grandmother lived in Cohasset, Massachusetts. That's actually where Witches of Eastwick was filmed.
Really?
Yeah, it's just the most picturesque, it's the quintessential New England coastline town, just fabulous. And then you go north, Marblehead and Rockport. There's a little house there with buoys on it, a little house on a dock. I think they call it Motif Number One because it's the most painted, scene in all of history. It's that one little house that's on the ends of the dock or whatever. But and further north, you go to like the southern Maine, York and Algonquin. I spent some time up in Algonquin years ago. A friend of mine bought a hotel up there, and he got jammed up with a chef, and so I had to go up and cook New Year's Eve dinner for him, and it was fun. I mean, there's some great restaurants up there, like Arrows, and that whole food scene exploded in Maine. I mean, Portland. Have you ever been to Portland, Maine?
No.
It's fabulous. I mean, it's a great city. It's almost like Lower Manhattan where they still have cobblestone streets in the art district there and a lot of great restaurants. And, you're right on the coast, you're right on the water. So it has this, I have this affinity to fish and the water. And, maybe that's why I got involved in,
You've said that before and I think that's fantastic.
Yeah, and I just need to be around it. Like, if I grew up in Ohio, I'd be on a therapist couch for the rest of my life, I need to be surrounded by water, not land. And it's one of the most beautiful places, And I've been, you know, all over the West Coast, you know, San Francisco and Carmel, California, down by Pebble Beach and Santa Barbara, L.A., San Diego, all of that. And it's pretty. It is. It's nice by the coast, obviously. But to me, there's nothing like New England. New England in the fall on the coast is just the most beautiful place on earth. And anybody gets a chance to go up there, you know, call me on my cell phone, you know, and I'll give you great restaurants to go to, whatever. But it's just –
So up in the Boston area, Terry actually was just up in Boston yesterday. What's the marketplace area, Faneuil Hall?
Yeah. Yeah, it's – you know, what strikes me so much about Boston is – the juxtaposition between the Revolutionary War and the Evolutionary War that's going on now. You know, you have these skyscrapers going up next to these buildings that have all this historical significance, you know, and have been around for 300, 400, 500 years.
Listen, Kerry sent me a picture of Plymouth Rock.
Yeah, well, Plymouth Rock, it's a nice little stone. But you know what's amazing about Plymouth? If you ever go to Plymouth, Massachusetts, they have the, I guess, the replicas of the Nina Pina and Santa Maria. The bunks are like 4 feet long. Nobody was taller than 5 feet back then, you know. Everybody was short. That's why they elected George Washington president. He was 6'6", you know. He's like a giant.
Really?
Yeah.
But it's funny, you know, you talk about
excuse me.
All this. And I was talking with Kerry when I picked her up, and I said, you know, you're talking about the pilgrims and coming over. And I said, I don't know if we're allowed to talk about that anymore, because I was joking that you know, Columbus Day isn't a day to celebrate anymore. So it's gotten construed to being something else. So she goes, well, what could be wrong with the pilgrims? I said, they murdered turkeys.
They were
maybe there were issues with the Indians. I don't know.
They were undocumented aliens. Came in, they didn't get vetting. You know, I don't believe that whole scene. You ever see that scene where the Indians are making dinner with the pilgrims and all kind of hanging out together, right? You know?
I've seen many a cartoon or picture, yeah.
Okay. Did you ever see one of them with a coat on? You know how cold it is in November in New England? It's freezing up there.
You're right.
Yeah, I think it happened in Florida, and they're just not telling us.
Shordell and his logic. You destroy myths.
Well, it's, you know, I'm a product of a twisted mind, you know what I mean? But to me, Boston is, it's the greatest little city. It's like a countrified little New York, you know, and they have their issues just like we do.
Oh, my God. You know. So it's so funny you say that. I used to drive for a limo company. And I'd always be talking to my guests that I was driving around.
Right.
And they would be people that, you know, would say they've walked every street in New York and this,
sure,
that, and the other. And, you know, the reality is, I guess, to walk from the east side, I guess, like the FDR Drive.
River to river, yeah.
To the other side. So on the east side of New York is what? What's the body of water?
East River.
That's the East River.
Yeah.
And then on the west side is the Hudson River.
Yeah.
So to walk from one end to the other, east-west, it's not really a long walk.
No, it's 15 blocks or whatever.
I mean, but at the same time, to walk from like 125th Street down to Greenwich Village, that would be a...
That'd take you a couple of days.
But what's interesting is that in Boston, it's like a mini...
Yeah.
New York, at least to me. I mean, I was very lucky way back when the radio station honored me with an award ceremony, and I had to fly up to Boston, and I stayed at there's a park up there. I can't remember the name of it, but there's a hotel there that's like the Waldorf Astoria. It's really old school, you know, old school charm.
Yeah, that's not the Dorchester, the one at the Parker House.
It wasn't that, but it was
okay.
On that type of thing. But where I'm going is that I took a tour when I was up there because
right.
I hadn't been familiar. And you could actually walk really, you know, from one end to the other, north, south, east, west, and everything. And it was unbelievable. And I guess I ended up at Faneuil Hall. And for some reason, I had to have New England clam chowder,
yeah,
which was wonderful.
Spelled different, too. Chowdah. Chowder.
And what's funny is they even have their own Broadway, essentially.
Yeah.
It, you know, there's three theaters instead of we have
right.
20.
Yeah.
But and their bar hours are different. I got out late one night from dinner or whatever and decided to go to a club. And was just wandering around. I didn't get there till probably real late. And I think they close at 2 o'clock or 1 o'clock.
It's 1 o'clock, yeah.
1 o'clock. So I think I'm real smart. You know, I go up to the front of the line. There's a line of people, give the maitre d' some money to get in, and 20 minutes later, the place is closed.
No, and it's funny. They grab your beer at the end of 1 o'clock. I mean, it's not like, you know, you have a half an hour like in New York. You know, they would close at 4, and then you had a half an hour
but
to get out.
There's this phenomenon there that, at least where I was, when the bars close, there's like a lot of outdoor gathering places, food-related. I guess because it's still a little early.
Well, yeah, yeah.
And, like, all of a sudden there's, like, you know, doors open and there's, like, pizza being served, you know, curbside and stuff.
Sure.
And it was just so quaint because that night you had everybody in this, like, small plaza area and all these different food kiosks. And it was snow flurrying. It was just so ambient. I again, it goes back to, you know, just appreciate the moment.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I remember years ago in Bayville, you know, there used to be a club down there called the Lobster House. And now it's Jekyll and Hyde's or something, you know. And we used to, you know, go stumbling out of there or whatever. My band used to play there once in a while. And we'd leave there at like 3:30. And the souvlaki place was open till 4 next door. And so you would go to, you know, the Lobster House and party. Or I would play in the band or whatever. And then you'd stumble into the souvlaki place, have a souvlaki, and go home and go to bed, right, and dream about serial killers because you ate all the wrong food, right? So I remember taking my daughter there when she was about 6 years old. I said, oh, we got to go to the souvlaki place. We're in Bayville, you know. I said, that's so much memory. She said, the other thing, I had a souvlaki. I was horrified. I'm like, I can't believe I was eating this stuff, you know. I was like, you know, let me have a Greek salad instead, you know.
Funny. I understand, but, you know, go back to when we were in college.
Going back to Boston, it made so much sense to close the bars and restaurants at 1 o'clock because even if you were overindulging, you could still get 6-7 hours sleeping and get to work the next day. You know, in New York, they closed the bars at 4. And then you had a half an hour to screw around until they took the stuff away. So it was 4:30. I mean, if you got to get up at 7, you know what I mean, you're useless at that point, you know. And if you can't get, you know, drunk or lucky by 1 o'clock, you should go home and try again tomorrow. You know what I mean? It's like, you know, strikeout's a strikeout. What can I tell you, you know? So anyway, I love the city, and I just love going up there. In fact, this time of year, I start thinking about it because, you know, I do these food trips, you know, these like little 2-3 day food trips. Because it's hard for me to get a lot of time off in season, you know. So what I'll do is I'll take 2 days and I'll go to Boston, or I'll go to Philadelphia, or I'll go to Miami or something like that. Sometimes in driving distance, you know, Portland, Maine, and just eat in 4 restaurants a night, you know, for 2 or 3 nights. And the reason I do that, one is, you know, it indulges my food thing, you know. But there's a lot of R&D for me, you know. I see a lot of things that, hey, I'd like to incorporate that into my bag of tricks, or, you know, hey, I'll never do that again, you know, because I saw it happen here and it's a disaster, you know. So it's an educational thing for me. And I don't really like being bogged down with a lot of food on the plate, you know. I'd rather eat, you know, like 6 or 7 appetizers in the course of a night than an app, an entree, and a dessert. Doesn't, you know, dessert doesn't get me. Entrees, whatever.
I'm smiling because we just had this conversation, Carrie and I. We were planning on going out to dinner with a couple, and I suggested our friends over at Blackbird. I forget the proprietors' names, but Blackbird and Wantors.
Yeah, good guy. I can't think of his first
name. Great restaurant. But Carrie goes, I'm not sure if they appreciate small plates. And, you know, again, that gets into the whole thing, you know, if you go out to a family-style restaurant, you sort of got to go with people that enjoy the same thing. Otherwise, you're...
Yeah, why bother?
Yeah. So, we would, again, just... And also talking about the fact that when you go out in a group, sometimes it's inequitable. Carrie was saying that her daughter's a vegan, and wherever they went to eat or whatever, some of the kids were getting, you know, really expensive things.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
You know, she was just getting something very simple.
Sprouts, yeah.
And sometimes you have to be very bold to do this when you go out, but to tell the waiter or waitress, you know, separate checks for each of the 10 people. I mean, that's crazy.
Yeah. It's...
But I have friends that do that all the time. It's usually, you know, 4 couples, 5 couples, you know, these 2 are on this check, this is on
it's
that.
It's painful.
But so Carrie's daughter, they went out, and they didn't ask for it. But they, what do you call it, the waitress gave each person an individual check.
That's heroic.
So, but it reminds me of when you go out with heavy hitters and when I'm talking about drinking. So if you go to like Ruth Chris, we used to go with two other couples. And again, Kerry and I love just what you said, small plates, variety. Maybe we'll get a couple of appetizers.
Sure.
Never, never, never had to do anything about finances. We could care less.
Yeah, of course.
You know,
yeah. But it all evens out.
What we ended up getting was definitely less than everybody else. And then especially when, you know, somebody's drinking two or three glasses of wine or whatever. And that's just the way it is.
I think that's true. But, you know, there's a certain point where I understand. Like, I had this waitress used to work for me years ago, Madeline. She was about 130 years old. You ever see The Last Supper? The picture of The Last Supper?
Yeah,
Madeline
yeah.
was the waitress. She's in the background. She's behind Jesus and just to the right of John the Baptist. You know, she's right there. Anyway, she was this crotchety old woman, but we couldn't get rid of her because she was so funny and so ridiculous, right? So this table came in one time and says, "Excuse me, ma'am, can we have separate checks?" She goes, "Yes, you can if you sit at separate tables." You know, it was like the best response ever. But here's an example where it doesn't work out, and you got to be cognizant of what you're doing. I go away with a friend of mine, Dave. We play golf every year, you know, we'll go down south of PGA or whatever, you know, and we go out to dinner and it's always, you know, nobody cares. I mean, you know, he pays for the, you know, the rental car, I get the dinner, you know, it always, you know, it evens out at the end, except when I'm drinking expensive glasses of wine. Now, he's an Amstel guy. What's an Amstel? $5, $6, whatever. You know, I've been known to have $60 glasses of wine. So there's an inequity there. You know what I mean? And I'll never pin him with that tab, you know? I just wouldn't do it, you know? So if I decide to go on a wine tear, you know what I mean? I'll pick up that check, you know, or I'll, you know, make good that, hey, listen, you can't, you know, put the wine thing separate and I'll pay for that, you know? But other than that, you know, you go out with people who have the same likes and dislikes. It's fine. It always, you know, there's always somebody who had an extra Coke or something. Who cares at the end of the day? You know, just split it up. But some people, I mean, my brother-in-law one time, he can be a little on the thrifty side, you know. So a bunch of my family came into Panama Hattie's to see me when I was there years ago. And it was like 10 of them or 12 of them, whatever. And my brother-in-law insisted on separate check, you know. And my father was like, just put it on one check. No. And I said, you know, we didn't have this. We didn't have that. And my father went, all right, you know. So it turns out he gets a separate check for my sister and himself. And my father picks up the rest of the tab. He would have gotten it free if he just kept his mouth shut, you know. Yeah, sometimes your thrift gets you in trouble, you know. But it's funny, you know, you're talking about, you know, separate checks, this, that, and the other thing. And when a waitress is busy, it's a real pain in the ass, you know, to do that stuff because it's, you know, it's all time on, you know, the computer, whatever. But people are funny when they come into restaurants. I was saying on Jim's show this morning that I think that a lot of times people decide to send something back in the car on the way over to the restaurant. Now, I think there's a club out there. It's an underground club. It's like the Fight Club, you know. And you have to send something back to keep your membership in the club, or you have to torture the server. Otherwise, you know, and at the end, if you win, if you do it enough times, you get a trip to Hawaii. There's some kind of prize in it because, so anyway, the name of the place, one of my places, shall remain nameless because it doesn't matter. But guy orders a lamb chop, the lamb rack, right? So when we send out a lamb rack, it's cut and sliced. So you can see the degree of doneness when it comes out, right? And so he orders a medium rare. We send out what I consider to be a perfect medium rare. Now, medium rare and medium well, it's all subjective. You know, one man's medium rare is another man's too rare.
If I'm not incorrect, brown on the outside perimeter and then just a little bit pink or red
in
the middle?
No, that's more medium. It's got to be more rarer than that to be medium rare. But again, it's a matter of opinion. It's hard to get all these things right because everybody else has a different thought on it, you know? So as a cook, you're doing your best, you know, with experience to get it the color that you think it's going to, you know. Anyway, we send it out. It's too well done, right? So it comes back. Now, I said, did he touch it? No. As soon as I put it down, he said, take it back. It's too well done. Says, all right. So when something like that happens, we take that piece of meat and put it off to the side. Because I may get a medium. Nobody touched it. You know, I'm not throwing away a $25 piece of meat. It's crazy, right? And it's funny how people expect you to just throw in the garbage. You know, now if they're home and they drop a piece of meat in the litter box, you know what I mean? They just wash it off or kiss it up to God or whatever they do and put it back in the thing, you know? But they get real uppity when they come to the restaurant, right? So anyway, I put the thing off to the side. And, you know, and we're all, you know, pissing and moaning a little bit about, you know, like, yeah, this guy doesn't know what he's talking about, yada, yada. I said, just make another one, make it rare, you know what I mean? So we do that. We send it out. Now he sends it back. Now this one's too rare. The other one's too well done. This one's too rare. Now I'm furious. So my line cook, he says to me, what do you want me to do? I said, take the first one, heat it up, and send it back out.
When I heard that, I didn't know what was coming.
I said, first. So he goes, no, that's the one he sent back. I know. Take that one, heat it up, and send it back out. We send the first one back out. It's perfect. It's like, you know, you think –
No, it's
I'm
crazy.
This stuff up.
But in reality, though, in cooking, you know, if you're from the Ruth Chris
cooking
model, you know, the steak is served on a sizzling plate.
Yeah.
But even when you do the porterhouse thing at any of the Long Island steak restaurants, Bryant and Cooper or whatever, so the steak continues to cook.
Yeah.
So I don't know that it can be that drastic that it will change, but if the chef sends it out, you know, at the same time, if it continues to cook.
Yeah, well, no, I understand why they use a sizzle platter. They want to keep it hot, you know. But I don't think steak, you know, to me, food in general, the piping hot thing, it doesn't get me. I mean, you can't taste it. It's like if you boil coffee, you know, and drank a boiling cup of coffee, not only would you have third-degree burns on your tongue, but you wouldn't taste it. You'd be, you know.
But I get a kick out of either, again, Bryant and Cooper or like Peter Luger's. My dad, he loved the porterhouse, you know. Have whatever you want, but we're getting porterhouse. I don't know. I appreciate more of a strip steak a sirloin or whatever rather than having a porterhouse.
Well, it's the best of both worlds.
But
people.
At the same time, you'll cringe because I like my meat more well done.
Oh, I don't care about that.
My family likes it like more rare. Not black and blue, but rare.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, I would always try to accommodate. I like to make life easy. So they say get the medium rare, and they would always say to the waiter, oh, serve him a more well done piece. And then the chef would, you know, very articulately take two spoons. I don't know how they did it, you know, and take the slice and continue to cook it the plate.
Yeah. You know, it's funny, the well done thing. I know chefs get incensed over that. I don't really care. You paid $60 for a piece of meat. It's yours. I don't care what you do with it. You know, you want it well done. You want to put ketchup on it? Go get them. You know, I think people should eat what they like. You know, I don't understand the whole, you know, you're not going to soil that piece of meat by making it well done. I don't care. It's not mine. I mean, I don't want to eat it well done, but if you do, great. Go get them. Who cares? You know, it's like the wine. Drink whatever wine you like. If you like $3 bottles of wine, drink them. You know what I mean? What's the problem, you know?
So I'm sitting here and I had an epiphany. You started talking about waitstaff.
Yeah.
So you have a book out called Playing with Fire.
I do.
That was all about customer habits.
Yes.
What about something like behind the scenes at the restaurant, you know, from the other side?
Well, yeah, there's plenty of material there. I have a new book coming out called Second Helping, and it's in the editing process right now, which is, it's interesting this time because I have a new editor, and she apparently doesn't agree with me on a couple of things, right?
That could be good.
Well, she, you know, she keeps striking stuff out of the book. I said, you know, by the time you're done, it's going to be a pamphlet, you know. It's like, hey, did you read Tom's latest essay? You know what I mean? But she's right on a couple of things. You know, I think what happens is you can fall in love with your own words, you know, and you can think you're so clever that, you know, but there's a chance that you're not thinking about how other people think about it. And I think it's valuable to have another set of eyes.
I can relate because in the business that I'm in, radio, I work with clients and I have to come up with a radio spot many times.
Mm.
And when you work with the client, they're too close many times to their business.
Right.
I'm sort of in the middle. I'm not the end listener. So I have a little more insight, but I'm able to sort of push the business owner to understand what might be more prevalent and more of a sales message than, you know, him saying that the walls are red. How many times will somebody go to a restaurant or a store because the walls red? But yet, you know, they had some special faux painter come in and design this red marbleized wall.
Yeah, and it's
not that important.
Right, exactly.
But to your point, yeah, you know, you're telling a story, and for whatever reason, somebody else just pushing you and massaging you might either make it more succinct or more interesting.
Or in my case, save me from my own excesses, which, I tend to, I'm a slave to temptation. So every once in a while, I'll go off the rails and say something I probably shouldn't, you know. But I think the more important thing is, I think you have to learn how to be a good customer. It's easy to learn how to be, like the restaurant guy. But, you know, there's also learning how to be a good customer. And we need it now more than ever because there's a lot of stuff going on out there. And what I mean by that is years ago, I did a fair amount of consulting for restaurants. And the interesting part, I found that people would pay you, but they wouldn't listen to you. And then when the whole thing went sideways, they wanted to blame you, you know? And so when I was building Jewel, it was the first time I had really hired a top-notch professional designer, Sharon DeLago, and she was fabulous, right? But she had this idea about putting these upside-down lamps in the bar area. And I got one eyebrow up, and I'm going, you can't be serious. It's going to look ridiculous, you know, kind of thing. And I thought about it, and I said, you know what? I'm not going to be that customer. I hired her for a reason. She's done this her whole life. She's very, very good at it. And she told me, she goes, this is going to be one of the most talked about aspects of the design. And I'm like, whatever, you know, I don't think so. But you know what? I'm going to shut my mouth and let her do what she does. And turned out she was right. Other than the bathroom, it was like one of the most talked about aspects of the restaurant.
So this is crazy. I think, actually, in this show, this would be a perfect time for Matt, our engineer, to put the old Jewel spot. Jewel no longer exists, but you have to hear the radio spot because it does mention, I think, the lamps.
Oh, yeah.
But it talks about the decor because Jewel, so much of that restaurant was about decor.
That was fabulous, yeah.
You know, you had your bar area that was just very comfortable. You could dine there or just drink or stand by the bar. To the side of that, there was some high top, four tops, where you could also have dinner, you know, schedule to have dinner or end up there because it was booked. You had that common table right by the kitchen, which to me was phenomenal. It probably sat 10 or 12 people right ringside to the open kitchen. You had the upper promenade where it could be like semi-formal private party.
Yeah.
The way that Beijing.
Beijing is another place. Beijing is a little further away.
Beijing ended up morphing sometimes into a private dining area. You had the chef's room. What an incredible ambient restaurant. You had those, I'm exaggerating, $100,000 umbrellas outside on the patio area, which were really $30,000 each. Again, ambiance and just design. It was incredible. And that's before we talk about the food.
Yeah, no, Jewel is a special place for a long time. And the main reason it got sold is I got tired of being sued, you know. And this is what's going on in restaurant business today. I was talking to my daughter, and she's thinking about doing something with a friend of hers. And I'm like, you know, okay, you know, I'll be behind you 100%. I said, but, you know, at the end of the day, do you really want to be in a business where you're at the mercy of the employees? And that's what it is now. I mean, my experience is like all the employees I have, as soon as I tell them they need to do something, morph into Effley Bailey. Everybody knows their rights. You know, nobody knows the job, but they know their rights, right? You can't tell me to do that. I have to get a break. It's unbelievable. And, you know, I come from an era where, and I'm not saying it's right or wrong, but I come from an era where I wouldn't dare ask for a day. I was doing 6 days a week, 14 hours a day, from the time I was 15 to the time I was 45.
You got to understand, and this is the world where people were working from home or furloughed. They'd come back for 2 weeks, and then they'd go on vacation.
No, they work by appointment, too. I mean, you have to make an appointment to get them in there. It's like, it's unbelievable. Anyway, it's the business has changed so much in the last 5-6 years that I almost don't recognize it anymore. And, you know, to do restaurants the way I like to do them, I don't know if it's a viable thing anymore, you know, because you just, you need too many people. You're depending on, you know, no matter what I do in the kitchen, love it or hate it, can be destroyed in 5 minutes by bad service and
a surly waiter.
You know,
for safety, you have to have a triage station to either, I guess, at one point it was check temperature. Now you have to check vaccination records, at least if in the city, right? You can't eat dine in unless you're vaccinated.
You know, we had a guy, actually, my partner hired a guy. And get this, it's live radio. This guy's specialty was keeping people from being sued, right? It's like the anti-lawyer, you know? And what he would do, he came in.
Is this Ray Donovan, the fixer?
No. This is John Smith, the insurance guy. But he came in and he said to me, all right, so I'm going to show you how you can keep these lawsuits to a minimum. I'm like, all right. He says, what do you think is the biggest cause of lawsuits, Tom? You know, like the slip and fall lawsuits.
Mm-hmm.
I said, abject stupidity. He goes, well, I said that. I mean, you know, people, I've gone to restaurants every night that I'm not working since I'm 21 years old, right? I've never had a problem getting from the parking lot to the restaurant and back to my car. You can't imagine how many people do suicide attempts coming in, working out.
I have a friend that ran a chain of 10 supermarkets, and they, especially in the dairy section, had to have cameras because people would open a bottle of milk, splash it on the floor, and then slide
and
down the aisle.
Yeah, lie down. I know. It's crazy. And so anyway, this guy comes in. He says, so what do you do in the case of a fire? I said, I get out of the building. He goes, no. Do you have a written plan? I said, no, I don't have a written plan. He goes, you need a written plan, and it has to be posted somewhere so the employees know what to do. I said, trust me, they're going to get out of the building. I said, so let me get this straight. So a fire breaks out, right? And instead of getting out of the building, the employees run around trying to find the written plan to get out of the building so they can read it and then get out of the building. See, my plan, it gets you out a lot faster than your plan, you know. So he goes, you know, you're not thinking about this correctly. Apparently not, you know. It would take 7 years of college for me to be this stupid, you know, to come up with something like this, right? So he says to me, what do you do in a case? Let's say, I swear to God, this is true. He goes, let's say a disgruntled or angry spouse comes in a restaurant, like, with a weapon. What do you do? I get down. He goes, you don't have a written plan for that either? I said, you know, it slipped my mind on the opening. I never wrote it down. I said, so, okay, so the guy comes in. Here's the waitress is boinking the dishwasher. The guy's furious. He comes in with a gun. I confront him and go, listen, I know you're upset. He says, but wait here a second. I got to go get the plan. I'll be right back. Don't shoot anybody until I at least come back with the plan, and we can sit down and discuss your angst. You know, kidding
me? I got a nice bottle of wine.
Yeah,
we'll crack
it
open.
We'll talk about it. It's like ridiculous, you know? Anyway, I'm like sitting there with my fingers in my eyes going, I can't believe it. How much you get paid for this? My plan's way better than yours. It'd take 3 minutes to explain it to everybody, and I walk out with 20 grand, you know? Oh, please. This is where we are, you know? This is where we are as a country.
There you go.
It's hilarious.
So here's the perfect place for us to stop. Take a moment. Matt's going to put in the Juul commercial just for old time's sake. Juul is not open, but we're just trying to be topical.
Yeah.
See you in a few minutes.
All right. Take a break.
Juul, Tom Jaudel's latest gem, brings Las Vegas ambiance to the Melville Corridor. Fountains, lights, waterfalls, as well as a destination interactive men's room are all part of the mysteries awaiting you at Juul. Not to be forgotten is the cuisine, best described as contemporary American food that leans heavily on the bounty of Long Island. A farm-to-table menu featuring local fishermen, farmers, and growers. It allows you the choice of casual or special occasion dining. Start with millionaire pizza or duck in a jar. Entrees like short ribs, braised in root beer, butternut squash lasagna, or tuna. There are 4 private rooms that seat up to 200 guests and a chef's table with seating up to 10. Juul's award-winning international wine list has over 300 selections, as well as 20 by the glass, and boasts the most comprehensive list of local wines on Long Island. Juul at Ruby Corporate Plaza, Route 110, just south of the LIE, exit 49 in Melville. Juul.
Welcome back. You're listening to Playing with Fire on 1100 WHLI and 104.7 WHLI FM. Here with your host, Tom Shawdell, author, chef, and restaurateur.
Yeah, so we're talking about all things restaurants today, only insanity of the insurance. And
understand that we just played the Juul commercial, and it was because we referenced it earlier in the show. Juul is not open anymore, unfortunately. But we wanted you to just hear what I think is a great description of what was a great restaurant.
And a piece of nostalgia, by the way, right? It's a piece of restaurant history on Long Island, so we're down for that.
So listen, we had a really exciting show last week. We tried to engage the audience, and sure enough, we did. We had talked about sending an email to fire@whli.com, fire@whli.com. And we talked about... To get back to us with a song that included food, because we're all about food here, supposedly, and we're a music radio station if you enjoy listening to WHLI. And we got a number of responses, like very quickly, during the show, after the show. So we're going to go through some of those. But I also had a great idea, and again, we really enjoy the interaction with the audience. So on most radio shows, there's this opportunity to have, they call them liners, where people get to talk and say something about the radio station. If there's any listeners that would like
to
be able to say how wonderful we are,
that's a, qualifier.
We're going to schedule one of our production team to give you a call and record a little message that would air and be included on the radio show.
Wow, that'd be fun.
So... It's what's really would be cool about it is these spots would be airing like 24/7 on WHLI, not necessarily during the show, but randomly you could be listening to the radio station and hear your voice on the radio, and that would be exciting for your kids, your friends.
It's kind of a cool thing, yeah. I like that.
So first, I just want to read one email that came, and it was funny because it didn't come until Monday, and it came from our listener Ron Boning, who writes into us a lot, and we love it. But he goes, sorry to bother you again, Ron. It's never a bother.
We love
hearing from you. So he writes in and he said, I just heard the show today on Monday, because he listens on the podcast.
If you
go to whli.com, there's a button, there's a picture of Tom in his bandana slaving at the hot stove. And you click on that, and you can see the various episodes. And our engineer, Matt, usually titles them with the subject matter of each week's show. But anyway, Ron writes in and says, I just heard it today, the show. Probably the song I think of that everybody knows, See You Later, Alligator. Alligator meat.
Yeah, there you go.
Now, that was not be something I would have thought about.
This one that comes, the only one that comes to mind to me is, I worked with this maniac, Shorty, years ago. He's my first chef. He was absolutely out of his mind. And his two greatest attributes were an ability to drink 3 bottles of vodka a day and a penchant for carrying unlicensed firearms. He was completely out of his mind, right? But he used to walk around singing this song, and I'll never forget it. She's too old to cut the mustard anymore. You know, now, I didn't even know what that meant back then, you know. But it's the only song I can think of with food in it. Can you think of any?
You started singing Sugar Sugar, I think, which was by the Archies. Is a song that I would never think I would see the words come out.
No,
through your mouth.
No, it's not one I would listen to on an extended basis, but it does involve food.
I think the number one mention that came in was Jimmy Buffett, Cheeseburger in Paradise.
That's right. Okay.
So that was a good one. There were a number of others, but I'll break in every so often and we can review some of the other emails. But again, please, if you want to be on the air, send us an email. We'll get back to you and then find out at a convenient time where we can just record the snippet. And again, if anybody has any ideas of what they like to hear us talk about, I guess this week I throw out to the audience, we talked about travel a little bit. And Tom talked about the Boston area, New England area, the upper Northeast. Just in traveling, tell us the name and about a restaurant that is something that stands out in your mind.
Yeah, I'm always looking for little finds, you know, even on Long Island. I mean, we all know what the great restaurants are, and hopefully we all frequent them. And but every once in a while, you find this little hole-in-the-wall thing that nobody knows about. And I'll give you an example, and I can't remember the name for the life of me, but you know Old Country Road where Fortune Office is there in Westbury?
Yes.
There's an Italian restaurant across the street there, and it's a different name now, but years ago when my daughter's 38 now, and when she was like 10, I'm going back almost 30 years, we would go to this little Italian restaurant that was in that location just specifically for the penne amatriciana. It was ethereal. It was just the best I ever had, and we would go there at least once every 2 weeks, you know.
And marciata sauce, what type of sauce is
it's,
that?
It's basically bacon and onions, you know, pancetta, you know, which is the belly,
in a brothy
the belly
type?
Bacon. No, it's like a tomato-y thing.
Oh.
But he just, whatever it was the you know, the ratio of bacon to onions to tomatoes or whatever. The guy just nailed it all the time, you know. And I would never order anything else. We'd just go there specifically for that. And it was funny. I ran into the chef. He recognized me one day, and we were, I don't know where I was, Home Depot or something like that. And he goes, Tom, I'm the chef from the, oh, my God, I love you. Amatriciana sauce. He goes, I remember you used to come in for it all the time. I said, yeah, it was the best I ever had. I mean, it was fabulous. He goes, you want the recipe? And I thought about it for a minute, and I went, no, it's yours. It's special.
That's
yours.
Cool.
You know, you keep that. As much as I'd love to know, you know, I'll figure it out on my own at some point. Maybe I can get close, but yours is yours, and it's so good that you should just keep that under wraps. I'll wait for the book to come out. How's that?
You know? There you go.
Yeah. But that's my point is with this is that there's certain restaurants that I go to just for one specific thing. So that's what I'm looking for. I'm looking for little finds on Long Island, some of these little ethnic places, you know.
But that's an interesting thought. So I like when somebody goes to a restaurant and they go, the snapper or the blackened sea bass,
yeah,
to the waitress. Which would you get? Now, that has no bearing on what your taste
yeah,
is.
I know.
So, however, you know, restaurants many times have an iconic go-to dish.
Mm-hmm.
And the wait staff knows what's the most popular item.
Sure.
So they can help. again, sometimes people, so many times I'm with a guest, and they'll say that to the waitress. And if the waitress or waiter is smart, they're going to say, well, my taste might be different than yours, but I like this, or many people, you know, have this, or this isn't always on the menu and it is now. There can be guidance.
Here's where becoming a good customer comes into play. And maybe this is the theme of the show today, if Matt's going to write that down. Because I can't imagine the pain he goes through trying to figure out what the hell we were talking about most weeks. Because I don't know. But anyway, you know, becoming a good customer, there's certain things, you know, we always have this, like, customer's bill of rights. But there's a restaurant bill of rights. There's another side to this, you know. So if you come in, well, you know, like, tell the chef to make me whatever he wants. Now, that's fine if you eat everything. But if you have specific likes and dislikes, it's unfair, you know, it's the same thing with wine, you know. Well, pick out a wine for me. Well, give me a hint, you know. I mean, how about a color? How about a flavor? How about a, you know, profile?
In the spirit of what you're saying, I know sometimes Carrie doesn't like onions, and even cooked or uncooked, and sometimes she'll say to the waitstaff, you know, I'd like this, but can you hold the onions?
Yeah.
Well, maybe in a salad they can.
Right.
But at the same time, if it's ratatouille, which is cooked with it or whatever,
right.
No.
Yeah.
But we're reasonable people, and they say that, and she either accepts that it's going to have that,
right,
or she moves on to something else. It's the patron, I'm assuming, that, you know, again, makes an expectation of something that's an important – it's like I'll have ham and eggs, but I don't want any ham.
Yeah, hold the eggs.
You know.
Yeah, no, look – I think what happens, I don't mind if somebody has, listen, I have an issue with garlic. Is there any garlic in it? Yes, no, whatever. And then you make the decision when you're going to have it or not. It's the people that come in and try and play Rachel Ray with the dinner and then screw it all up and then send it back because there's no flavor in it. Well, you're the architect of this. I mean, you wrote the recipe. You know what are you torturing me for, you know, kind of thing. So I think that there's, you know, menu items, and again, this is learning how to become a good customer. Menu items are there for a reason. The reason that dish is there is because, A, it's popular. B, it's expeditious as far as getting it out. You know, C, it makes good sense from a culinary standpoint. Or D, it's profitable. Those are the only four reasons for those things to be there. And this is what we can do. A menu is what we can do. It's a list of ingredients and a list of dishes and a list of cooking techniques that we can do for a reasonable amount of people in a reasonable amount of time. You know, it's not like, you know, when you come in and throw a monkey wrench into that gear, you gum up the works and then everything changes, right? So now I have to spend an inordinate amount of time on your dinner. And if I have to do that, I'm taking time away from somebody else's. And this is the great thing that people don't understand. Well, why can't you just do this? Well, because I'm not set up to do that. I mean, you know, people ask for breakfast sometimes at 2 p.m. at the club, you know, can I get an omelet? No. Well, what's the big deal? Well, there's no big deal if I had the eggs ready and the ham and the cheese and a Western and whatever hell you want. But if I have to go search in the kitchen for all these ingredients, now it takes me 15 minutes to get an omelet out. Now he's pissed off because it's taking too long. Well, this is your fault. You have a menu. Order something on a menu. You get in 5 minutes. Order something off the menu. It may take some time, you know. I'll give you an example. We had a guy who was a real pain in the rear end. He used to come into one of my restaurants 107 years ago, right? And he was a fairly well-oiled guy, and he was kind of spoiled. He got what he wanted most of the time, you know, which is fine, whatever. So he comes in one night. He wants French fries. No French fries on the menu. What's the big deal? Hot chef can't make French fries. So I said, all right, you know what? Okay, I'll make a French fries. So I go downstairs, right? I peel a potato. This is in the middle of dinner, right? I'm running around like an idiot, right? I chop them up. Now you got to blanch them. I got to turn the oil down, you know, turn it back up. So I send him out, $25 French fries. The guy hits the roof, right? He's completely out of his mind. You got to be kidding. $25 for French fries. It's labor. It took me half an hour. Man, what do you think? I mean, 20, that's 50. I think I'm worth $50 an hour. I mean, come on, you know? So that's it. If you want to do that and you want to screw up the whole works, then you have to be willing to either A, wait for it, or B, pay for it, you know? It's not fair to the restaurant to do that. And little things like, you know, can I have the garlic and a sauce on the side? I get all of that. It's fine, whatever. But I think that from my standpoint, it's like reasonable doubt in a jury case. You know, you have to be able to attach the doubt to a reason. There's a reason that you're doubting, and here's the reason, and you can present it. It's the same thing in the kitchen. I tell my cooks, a reasonable no is okay. If you can attach the reason that you're saying no to the customer, I'm fine with it. Like, can I have an omelet? No. What's the reason? Well, I have to run downstairs for the eggs. I don't know where the ham is. We're not set up for it. I'm in the middle of dinner. I'm too busy. That's a reason. You know, if you're standing there with a bunch of omelet stuff in front of you and the guy says, can I have an omelet? You go, no, there's no reason not to do it. So you have to do it. And that's the thing. And I always tell the wait staff, you know, sauce on a side, a veg for a veg, a starch for a starch. You can do all of that without coming and asking me, you know. If they don't want broccoli and they want green beans instead, that's fine, you know. 5 minutes after I tell them, can I have broccoli instead of green beans? I'm like, it's unbelievable, you know. So I feel like I almost feel like I'm fighting wars on six fronts here.
And I'm not the perfect patron, but many times maybe there is a side dish that comes with something and I don't want it, or there's something more desirable that I want. And I'll say, if it can be switched out, fine.
Right.
If you need to upcharge me, I understand.
Totally.
I'm not an angel, but...
Yeah, no, that's perfectly acceptable. And, you know, like I said, that falls under my side for a side, starch for a starch. You know, if you want potatoes instead of broccoli, who cares? That's fine. I'll give it to you, you know. But now, can I have the salmon with the... I want the salmon with the garnish from the lamb chops, but I don't want the lamb chop thing and put it over here and then take the thing from the halibut and stick... That's when everything gets, like, it goes sideways, you know. And
I
no thank you, you know.
So... Again, I want to go back to some interaction with our listeners. Again, fire@whli.com, fire@whli.com. We got a most incredible response to last week's discussion about songs with associated with food and wine. Listener Gregory Sella, I'm not sure if it's Sella or Cella, but he writes in, "Hi, Tom and Stu, so glad you're back to 9 a.m. Was missing most of your 8 a.m. broadcasts and had to catch up via your podcast. Here are a few oldies you should remember." This is the most, in, this This list came in 10 minutes after the show was over.
Oh, wow.
And it's incredible. So first he starts with food songs, and I'm not familiar with all of them. Maybe the name, but not the artist. But
I'll hum them for you.
One is Shrimp Boats by Joe Stafford.
I don't know that one.
Another one is Peanuts by Little Joe and the Thrillers. Another one is Pizza Pie by Rob Royce. Well, Watermelon Man by Mongo Santa Maria. The Banana Boat Song from Harry Belafonte.
That I know.
Cinnamon from Tommy Rowe. Sugar Shack, Jimmy Gilmore and the Fireballs. Cherry Pie, Skip and Flip. Blueberry Hill.
Blueberry Hill. How can you not know that one?
A fruit. Fats Domino. Here's one. Hot Diggity Dog Diggity. Perry Como. He goes, maybe a stretch, but it's hot dog.
Yeah.
Drink songs. Kisses Sweeter Than Wine, Jimmy Rogers. Brandy, The Looking Glass. I'm familiar with that one.
Yeah.
Little Old Winemaker Me, Dean Martin. Bottle of Wine, Jimmy Gilmore and the Fireballs. And he giggles, hey, they made both lists, the food and the wine. And then Just for Fun, he even goes on, Cocktails for Two by Spike Jones and the City Slickers. And he says that the video was worth watching.
Really? Wow.
And he says, can you spot Victor Borge? Both groups, one song, A Jug of Wine, A Loaf of Bread, and Thou, Rudy Valley. That's all I got for now. Hope you enjoyed it.
That's it.
Wow, that's pretty good. And again, this is just moments after the broadcast of last week's show.
Mr. Zilla has a lot of time on his hands, apparently.
But thank you for...
Yeah, it was great.
We love it. We love it.
Fun stuff. What's better than food and wine? I mean, I was talking about this with Jim this morning, and, I was talking about, how you get up and you're in a mood or whatever. And I'm always in a good mood. I'm never really down about anything. And I think a lot of it has to do with my choice of careers. I mean, I'm still, after 53 years of doing this, still excited to go to work, still interested in, finding new ways to handle, proteins and vegetables and different flavor combinations.
The only thing is you're a little misdirected because we want you to do all that, but we want you to have a retail location in Nassau County.
Yeah. Find me something I don't need any employees for and I'll be happy to accommodate you, It's just I'm going to wait to see what shakes out with all this before I do anything stupid. So we'll see what happens with that. But yeah, I still love it. I still love the cooking part of it, and that's really what always got me out of bed. It was never, the money end of the restaurant business because there's very little in it. I like the hours. Most people say, "Oh, I got to get out of this. I got to get a job where I'm weekends off." Why would you want weekends off? That's when everybody else is off, So I'd rather just, go to a golf course on a Monday or a Tuesday than a Saturday when you're waiting 3 hours or whatever. But it's a tough career choice now because, a lot of people don't want to put in the time and effort it takes to get good at this and. And, the hours are demanding. It's the holiday, the weekends, the whole thing. And I get all of that, for most normal people. That's why you have to be like me. You have to be totally abnormal to, I told you I went for a nuclear stress test and the doctor told me I was normal. I said, you're the first one that's ever said that.
That's nice to hear.
Yeah, who knew,
So here we go, one more. Daniel Gillon from East Rockaway, a listener, and I mentioned this song before, but he has two Jimmy Buffett songs, one, Cheeseburger in Paradise, which I'm familiar with, the other one, Grapefruit, Juicy Fruit.
Yeah, I don't know that one. I'm not a big Jimmy Buffett guy. He cured me with the first one, the Living on Sponge Cake thing, or whatever that was, Margaritaville, I guess it was called. And his music is fun. I mean, he's got that whole, Key West kind of vibe in it, And the people that follow him are just nuts. Did you ever see the parrot heads or something they call them?
Yes.
They get all decked out and he's like deadheads or something, only less pot,
Yeah, yeah. So here's a go to another one. Listener Stephen Solomon, he titles it Another Enjoyable Show. Tom mentioned eating local produce grown locally. Well, that's what usually happens with local produce.
Yeah, well.
I'm just trying to be funny. And local seafood in season reminded me of the psychic Edgar Cayce, who many years ago recommended the same. Edgar Chase, pronounced Casey.
Yeah.
See, thank you for all the assistance here. 1877 to 1945 has been called the sleeping prophet, the father of holistic medicine, and the most documented psychic of the 20th century. Recently, Stu mentioned beef tongue, which I haven't tasted in years, but I recall the flavor and texture of when my mom cooked it when I was a child. Tom may not be aware that, according to experts, the pot sold today is more than potent than he smoked in the 70s. Agree with Tom that we don't need another legal drug. A Jones Beach lifeguard told me that some of the ocean rescues are alcohol-related, the swimmers, not the lifeguards. And alcohol accounts for some of our Long Island boating accidents.
Yeah, for sure.
Thank you, Stu, for reminding us of 104.7 WHLI-FM. The sound quality is so much better on car radio, especially when passing over, under the overhead power lines. Songs with food or wine, I only recall, and this is a great one, Days of Wine and Roses.
Oh, yeah, that's a classic.
But with Google, I found a slew of them. Here's to many more episodes of Playing with Fire, and I hope Stu starts a Facebook page for the show soon.
Yeah, me too.
So I've got my work cut out for me.
You
but
do.
I'm telling you, these responses to the show are so enlightening and
fulfilling.
Yeah,
no, it's encouraging too. I mean, it's nice to know that people enjoy, you know, what we're doing. And listen, it's lighthearted and it's fun. And it's a subject that, you know, everybody, you know, comes across a couple of times a day. You know, you can talk about food forever, and you never run out of material between ingredients and techniques and, you know, and stuff like that. It's just, for me, it's a fascinating subject. It's like music. It's just, there's no end to it. You never really get a grasp on all of it, you know. So it's a constant journey, you know, of trying to get better, even if you're, you know, at home, your housewife, or can you use that term anymore? I don't even know. But, you know, you're in the house, or you're cooking at home, or you're doing it on a semi-professional level or a complete professional level. The journey never ends. Like I said, I have a tremendous amount of experience. And I'm feeling like I'm just scratching the surface, you know, which is crazy.
It's
right?
All good. It's so funny. Last week when I was down in North Carolina, I actually had a chance to listen to the show.
Uh-huh.
And Carrie's sitting next to me doing some stuff. And we talk about cooking corn. And I said, you can cook it in the microwave in the husks. She goes, can you really do that?
Sure.
I said, yeah.
Yeah.
But the reason I bring that up is we got – this might be another one from Ron Boning, again, a good listener of the show. And he, again, titles it Food Songs. And he goes, Stu, when you came up with food and drink song titles, I had to go to my 45 record collection.
Oh, no.
That's so cool. Here we go. American Pie.
Yeah,
great.
There you go.
Blueberry Hill.
Yep.
We just heard about that one. Banana Boat Song. Honeycomb. Kisses. Sweeter Than Wine. Gingerbread Man. On Top of Spaghetti. Tom's favorite, Sugar Sugar, Brandy, Lollipop, Lollipop, My Boy, Lollipop, Honey, Honey, Baby, It's Cold Outside. Oh, I guess it's Honey, Honey, Baby, It's Cold Outside.
Oh, I was going to say, that's a...
And again, the Days of Wines and Roses. The list will get you started. Do you want more? Of course we want more. Now on the barbecue, try romaine lettuce, which I believe you've talked about,
Tom.
I did,
yeah.
Cut in half lengthwise, spray with olive oil, place on the barbecue. When grill marks appear, turn over. Total time about 6 minutes. Serve with a vinaigrette or salad dressing.
Sounds like my recipe.
Yeah. Corn on the cob. Open silk end just a little. Run cold water into the husk and close silk end as good as possible. I put the corn on the grill when I start to heat the grill. Most meats will cook in about 20 minutes. Turn the corn a few times. When the corn has heated, using a sharp knife, cut through the husk about two rows of corn from the stem end. Shake and squeeze out the corn of cob with nut of the still attached when it comes out.
Yeah.
Ron Boning. Tom, how can I get a copy of your book, Playing with Fire?
Amazon.
Amazon.
But listen, we have to get going here. We're running out of time. Yeah, the book's still on Amazon. You still can get it on Amazon, Playing with Fire. Anyway, we're going to close the show with Tom's Three Keys to Life. I want to thank everybody for listening again. And life is too short to drink bad wine. Treat every meal like it was your very last. And keep chocolate as important in your life as sex and pizza.
Sweet Fancy Long Island is the award-winning dessert and pastry company that has become one of the hottest sources for bakery treats available for delivery on Long Island. Each mouth-watering creation has a personality all its own, teasing the palate with its rich flavors, complex textures, and eye-catching presentations. All items at Sweet Fancy Long Island are made 100% from scratch using the highest quality ingredients: Belgian chocolate, European butter, vanilla beans from Tahiti, and the richest, most flavorful fruits available. Their clients can enjoy any one of our delectable confections from one-of-a-kind pastries, specialty and occasion cakes, French macarons, and karma cups. Their signature line includes an assortment of charming, personalized size desserts served in miniature mason jars. The Sweet Fancy Long Island team takes great pride in presenting a unique, delicious, an elegant dessert experience and works closely with every client to create a memorable dessert that will add an exciting dimension to any celebration. Presently, the work of Sweet Fancy Long Island have been found in some of the area's top restaurants, country clubs, gourmet shops, catering facilities, and Food Network. Go to sweetfancyli.com to order online or to view their incredible gallery of desserts.
Amano Osteria and Wine Bar has been created by Adam Lovett and Tom Shawdell to bring the feel and flavors of a true Tuscan Osteria to the North Fork. Amano showcases local growers, farmers, cheese, and winemakers, marrying their ingredients with the taste traditions of the Tuscan countryside. The casual appeal, the flavors of Italy, and a moderate price structure appeal to all, ensuring year-round patronage. This North Fork eatery sends out snappy salads and seafood, pastas and antipasta, along with a respectable wine list. Amano features local vineyards and Italian varietals from the U.S. and Italian wines. The kitchen remains open until 11 and has established a later dining crowd, sparking a local nightlife dining scene. Amano is on the cutting edge of a new high-quality and affordable dining experience on the North Fork. Amano Osteria and Wine Bar, 13550 Main Road in Matatuck. Serving dinner daily, Amano is also open for lunch on Saturday and Sunday. For reservations and further information, call them at 631-298-4800 or visit them on the web at amanorestaurant.com.